secretly a hair metal band fan?
I love it. Yes, absolutely, dude. All this classic rock stuff.
Yeah.
Well, I got the opportunity to host a classic rock show for about a year and a half.
Tell me more. Like, did you host a show?
104.1 The Eagle, flying high with Wyoming's classics on 104.1. Yeah, that whole thing.
Did you change your voice like that when you did it,
dude?
Too?
I was fresh out of college, so I was just like 104.1. Yeah, trying to do the whole radio thing, not being myself. Oh, 100%.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. But in turn, got to listen to a lot of this music.
Yeah. That's how it was for me in my first job with country music. Country music was not my thing, obviously. And then I went to Seguin, Texas, and the radio was country music. And it was the late 90s, so it was all the 90s country.
Oh, the best country.
It really was.
Best country.
I'm glad you said that, not old man over here in the corner. Country music was better than your country music.
It was emotional, and it was awesome, and musically it was great, and you had so many different kinds. Yeah, 90s country, man, that's where it's at.
Whose bed have your boots been under? You know, that's a good song, too.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it really was good music back then.
Oh, for sure.
You know, not to take away that something isn't good today or anything
like
that.
Yeah, still some good stuff.
But you were raised in your career to this music. I was raised. You always kind of remember your first.
Yeah,
you know,
100%.
Where you kind of got started and what you did. So who was your favorite hair band of all time?
That's a good question.
Rock, thank you. I mean,
if I just had to go rock band and not hair band, I'd do like Boston.
Well, I think they're considered a hair
band. You consider a hair band?
Okay. I think any 70s, 80s.
Any 70s? Okay, yeah. Then probably Boston.
Really?
Yeah, I think so.
Why? Is it more than a feeling for you, or is it you just like them?
His voice.
You know somebody named Amanda?
Guitars. I love the song Smokin'. I don't know why. Journey's great.
I told you the Journey story, right? When we were in Detroit, what the beer vendor said to me?
No.
Oh, I didn't?
I don't think so.
Okay, so they're playing, you know, the just a small town girl.
Oh, yeah.
Living in a lonely world. and the whole stadium singing, right? Screaming the song, right?
Of course.
Took the midnight train going anywhere. Beer vendor stops. And I was buying, a water or something from him. It was Saturday afternoon. It was hot.
Oh, yeah.
And he goes, God, I hate this song. He goes, these people here. He goes, these people think this is an anthem for Detroit. And he goes, the song literally says, take a midnight train going anywhere. They're literally going to get on a train going anywhere but here. And these people think this is an anthem for the city.
It's for them.
And I'm like, oh my God, I never thought of it like that.
That's amazing.
Right? Isn't it? When you think about that, living in a lonely world.
Yeah, Detroit's like, yeah. It's like, no. He wants to get out.
Yeah. Take a midnight train going anywhere.
Like 816 says, Boston and Journey are not hair bands. You fools.
Okay. I don't call me a fool. I don't have time for that. I really don't, you know. Jesus.
I mean. Oh, I knew someone would get mad about it. That's not a hair band. Okay.
Okay, fine.
Okay, sorry.
Define a hair band, bro.
I know. I was like,
who the hell cares?
Yeah.
Like Rat, is that a hair band? Poison, White Snake.
Poison's a good one. Yeah, Motley Crue is one I'm seeing. That would be one of my top ones for sure as well.
Guns N' Roses.
Yep.
They're not considered a hair band. Def Leppard.
Bon Jovi.
When was the last time Hannah poured sugar on you? I just want to win, Jim. Yeah, Bon Jovi, that's considered it. Like, oh
considering
my God.
That? Yeah.
I mean, why do we not consider Boston and Journey?
I understand that generation
of music, you know, that people just kind of love it. You know, as we were talking about earlier with Ozzy passing away and whatnot, a lot of those songs are transcendent as well, too. Like, you know, Journey, Small Town Girl, man, living in a lonely world. That comes on at any bar, any game, like everybody's singing. Everybody knows that song. And that's why when Ozzy passed away yesterday, I was kind of thinking to myself, damn, like everybody knows him. Like if I went to my kids and I said Ozzy Osbourne died, they look at me and go, I don't know who that is. But if I played Crazy Train, they'd be like, oh, that guy. Yeah,
like,
I know who that is. I know that song. Yeah. I've heard that song my whole
love
life.
Love that song.
Yeah, love that song. So we'll get into more of that coming up in a little bit later on. I want to run something by you before we get to our go with the question. I'll run this by you later. No, that's fine.
Didn't know where you were going.
Go with your question.
Okay. Just a few minutes. 44 days. A few minutes, just a few days. We are ramping up, baby. Training camp has started. They are in St. Joe, day number 2 today. We'll see who the starters are. Maybe Josh Simmons starting for a second straight day at left tackle. Which position group other than that offensive line? Because I think that would just take the main portion of the answers. Which position group are you most concerned with? I don't want to say worried, but just concerned with or interested in how it works out, maybe. 913-586-7965.
I thought about this for a while, and I love that you removed the offensive line because it's the same as, other than Patrick Mahomes, who's the best quarterback in the NFL, right? You've got to remove what the big answer is that you know everybody is going to kind of, you know, glam onto. And I thought about this for a while. I think I know what the fans' answer is going to be. But for me, I think it's defensive line. And I don't know where you are on that. But I think the defensive line is a very intriguing position. You know, a couple of new drafted players in there. You got the continued growth of FAU. You've got a full season with Charles Omenihu. You've got the newly minted George Karlaftis. And, of course, you always have Chris Jones on the defensive line. Last name I mentioned on there because he's the one you know. You know what you're going to get out of Chris Jones, right? You know he's going to be there and he's going to be ready to go. You kind of know what you're going to get out of George. You kind of know what you're going to get out of, you know, Omenihu. The rest of the crew, you just don't know. And I think that's fun. It's okay, you know, to have a position group that we're not so sure about, but they spent a lot of effort and resources into fixing that. They also have Jerry Tillery on their defensive line, which I completely forgot about, that he's
on their first-round pick, I believe.
Well, but I picture Jerry Tillery, first of all, as old because I feel like he's been around forever. But I don't know that he has been around as long as I think he's been around. And I just picture him as like a big dude in the middle that's going to plug up a lot of offensive linemen and holes, and it's going to allow like Chris Jones and these other dudes to get after it a little bit. But I'm really intrigued with the defensive line. A lot of new faces, a lot of new dudes on that defensive line. And so I think that's the position, other than the offensive line, that I think is the most intriguing going into training camp. What about you?
6'6", 300 pounds, Jerry Tillery. That's a big man. 28 years old. I'll go, I could choose so many, but I have to just choose one. I'm going to go running back.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, because I just feel like we're all kind of slotted in. Oh, okay, Pacheco, Kareem Hunt, and we'll see what else happens. Breshard Smith could be really fun. And it's just like, okay, well, they gave more guaranteed money to Elijah Mitchell than they did Kareem Hunt. And no one's talking about Elijah Mitchell. And Isaiah Pacheco, all the
Everybody's talking about like Elijah Mitchell's going to get cut.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, dude, they gave him $2.5 million.
I don't think he's getting cut.
No, and he was good in San Francisco with Kyle Shanahan. So I just think there's a chance, like, who knows, maybe we're in week 5 or week 6. I think Pacheco probably starts the year as that RB1, but I just think there's a good chance, man, we're a month and a half into the season and the rotation's a little bit shaken up. If it's Elijah Mitchell or Kareem Hunt, or who knows, dude, maybe the sixth round pick, Breshard Smith, maybe he's just out of SMU. Maybe he's just a firecracker. He's going to return punts, and who knows, maybe he has some explosion and some pop that this backfield hasn't had in a couple years.
And I also think that you said running back. I thought everybody would kind of lean towards wide receiver this year, like a position group to watch, because while we do have stability, we don't have stability because of the Rice suspension. We don't know how long that's going to last and you know, and all that kind of stuff. And I think once that all gets cleared up and we know it's like a 2-game, 3-game suspension or something like that, then we can all take a deep breath and kind of settle in. Because I do think there's folks out there who believe like this is going to be some long suspension. I don't think that it is.
You say long, what do you?
Well, long is 6 or more games to me.
Oh, gosh, that'd be a long time.
I think so.
Yeah, 4 kind of feels like the max to me.
I think they offer him a 4, they appeal it, and it gets down to 2 or 3, maybe.
I could definitely see that.
That's kind of where I feel. I don't know. I'm just reading the what we've seen in the past. I don't have any information.
Same.
And neither does the team, because I've asked. How long?
I don't know.
You know, you get the, I know, you know. So we got to wait for the NFL to kind of do their thing and levy that suspension. But I don't think it's going to be one. Like you mentioned the October 1st date about an hour ago and who we want to see, you know, at the top of their level by October 1st, whether it be Josh Simmons or whether it be Rashi Rice. I think by October 1st, Rashi Rice should be back and ready to go. I think maybe he misses the month of September and then we're on.
And then it's going. And that's exactly what you'd rather have him miss, that September month rather than that December month, right?
Sure,
you want the suspension at the beginning of the season.
Yeah, absolutely.
Do you know, will we find that out, I guess, a month? Is it 2 weeks?
I would imagine they rule pretty quickly on this. I mean, we're getting to the start of the season.
Saying.
I say pretty quickly, probably by the time the season starts. You know?
I mean, we're, 2 weeks away from a Chiefs preseason game,
yeah,
I believe.
Yeah, we're 8 days away from the first preseason game of the NFL season, the Hall of Fame game.
Yes.
So a lot on the minds of the NFL. They're working this ESPN deal. They got some things to take care of before they can get to the discipline. So Once the ESPN deal gets taken care of,
then they'll worry about it. Okay.
Then we're on to kind of whatever the next is. Coming up here on 96.5 The Fan, how would you answer this question that was asked to an NFL GM? And is it a fair question? We'll discuss next.
You're listening to Fesco and Dusty. Make sure to follow us on Instagram at TheFan965 for behind-the-scenes content from the show. Kansas City's FM sports station. 96.5 The Fan. He's the only man in history to win a race in a hot dog costume and break the news that Chris Jones is back with the Chiefs.
I'll get on that, Coach.
Yeah, all right.
Here's Nate Taylor from The Athletic.
Well, we're going to talk to Nate Taylor of ESPN, the newly minted Nate Taylor of ESPN, in a couple of moments here as he is heading up to Chiefs training camp to get the boys in red started for the start of a new season up in St. Joe. So we'll talk to Nate Taylor coming up. And now, is Nate on the line? Hey, we got the phones working. Nate, how are you, my friend?
Good. I'm doing quite well. How are you, fellas?
Well, we're doing all right. We had Tammy Reed on yesterday talking a little bit about the Westport Historical Society that they're putting together a raffle to refurbish the 1855 Harris Carney House. And I couldn't figure out how to get the phone working. And she said to me, do you want to come down and help? Are you handy? I said, Tammy, I couldn't figure out how to get the phone on. How am I going to come down there and be of any help in this house, you know?
Oh, man, that is perfect. That does sound quite like Tammy to be like, well, if you can't do this, why don't you help me right now?
Exactly. And if you want to help Tammy and them raise money for the Westport Historical Society, you can go to westporthistoricalkc.org/raffle. They're auctioning off for $25. Listen to this. An opportunity to go to the Chiefs-Ravens game, field passes, an autographed football for Andy Reid, and a parking pass. So you got to enter that, right?
Wow. Yeah, I mean, you have to enter if you're any serious Chief fan who's going to be available, you know, the weekend of that game. Wow, what a deal.
Yeah, hell of a deal. For $25, 5 for $100 gets you in. So go to westporthistoricalkc.org/raffle. Let me ask you this. Is Simmons the winner of the raffle for left tackle? Are we ready to go with him as our starting left tackle?
You know, it's a fascinating topic because I think there's now legitimacy to the idea that we've talked about Josh Simmons really since the night of, you know, the draft. It's, you know, I'm shocked. I'll be honest. You know, the odds of this happening are extremely low, but he was a full participant yesterday. He's coming back obviously from the knee injury in October. So, you know, he's had almost a year of full rehab, full recovery. But because of Juwan Taylor's injury at right tackle, you know, and it's a minor knee injury, I'm sure he's doing the sensible veteran thing. Hey, I know the playbook. I've been here. I'm essentially on a, you know, last year of my contract. Mm-hmm. It's going to allow Josh Simmons to get just about every rep possible, especially early on into camp. And who knows, maybe even when the pads come on as early as Sunday. This is a real camp battle now, right? I mean, last year, you know, we were sort of told, hey, it's going to be, you know, a battle between Wanya Morris and Kingsley Suamantia. And it really wasn't, because Wanya wasn't really necessarily the player they had chosen for that position. Well, now they have real competition with Jalen Moore, who's obviously started yesterday at right tackle, just to kind of fill in for Juwan Taylor. But how much Josh Simmons progresses from yesterday for the next month will really be intriguing, because we all know he has the just athletic ability and the talent to be a high-level NFL left tackle. But doing it this soon, this quickly, after most teams were scared off because of the injury, I just think the Chiefs have to be thrilled with this progress so far. And if you can continue it, then you have a camp battle that you can actually watch day after day for the next month.
All right, Nate, let me ask you how your perception of Simmons has changed from when they announced his name on draft night to where we are today. How has your kind of mind changed and view of Simmons in that position changed?
So I think I've said this before, but just to remind people, like, Josh Simmons would have been a top, I don't know, 7, 8, 9, 10 draft pick if right. He was fully healthy, if he had no issues with, you know, the knee. And so once it got to like the 20s on draft night, it became very clear to me that, like, oh my God, the Chiefs are going to do it again. They're going to figure out a way to fill their biggest draft need on night one, because now we've entered the teams that have made the playoffs. And if you usually make the playoffs, gentlemen, you kind of have a left tackle. You kind of have a quarterback.
Yeah.
You know, you're sort of filling around the edges. Well, at that point, it's like, okay, if the Houston Texans aren't taking Josh Simmons, then he's going to fall to the Chiefs. So my perception was, this is a godsend for the team, because this so rarely happens that you get this talented of a player despite his injury, you know, at the 32nd pick. Now my perception is, okay, how long can they hold him off, essentially, right? How long can Jalen Moore say, hey, give me the first 3 to 4 games, you know, let me show you what I can do. And if the rookie continues to, like, just progress at this rapid rate, then okay, I understand, you know, maybe you put Jalen Moore at left guard just because you're paying him a lot more money than Kingsley Suamataia. And obviously, you know, Jalen Moore has been a more solid player, you know, in his 4-year career versus what we saw last year out of Kingsley. So there's a domino effect to all of this, fellas. And at the same time, I'm just like, okay, I'm ready to admit that this is legitimate, that I thought it was more sound to tell Joshua Simmons, hey, be prepared to learn everything, you know, keep continuing to be, have a great work ethic with the rehab. But look, this is essentially a redshirt year, and you were so talented, we had to take you. And so look to the future, look to 2026. Now that's like kind of out of the window. And so again, if there are no issues in training camp, ooh, buddy, it's going to be hard to keep him off the field.
So, yeah, talking to Nate Taylor of ESPN here on Fesco and Dusty at 96.5 The Fan. So could the battle, Nate, then be, if Josh Simmons really is ahead of schedule and persists to be that one at LT, could the battle really be on the right side of the line between Jalen Moore and Juwan Taylor?
You could make that argument. Now, I would still give the upper hand to Juwan Taylor, because Juwan Taylor is a very, very good right tackle. I know people are, you know, perturbed about the idea of him, you know, having the false starts and the alignment issues and, you know, maybe, you know, gaming the system to get an extra half second against the pass rushers. But when the play actually starts, Juwan Taylor's pretty good, comparable to, like, the average right tackle. So it would be tough to move Jalen Moore from, you know, a projected left tackle who's learned under Trent Williams to all of a sudden have him go to right tackle.
Mm-hmm.
But I understand why the question's being asked, just because, again, Josh Simmons gives you more possibilities than you could have imagined, you know, when it was the start of the draft. I mean, it's just, again, it's kind of shocking that if the Chiefs offense gets on track, if they become, as I like to say, if they become a spaceship again, where it's, you know, they're flying at warp speed and it's fun and it's, you know, trick plays here and there and deep passes, a lot of that will be based on the fact that Josh Simmons is around, that you have more flexibility on the offensive line, especially at the edges, than you had at any point last season. So I would still give the upper hand to Juwan Taylor, but it's not out of the realm of possibility that you could say, hey, if Juwan needs more time with the knee injury, or if it's like a lingering thing and you just want to see what it looks like with Jalen Moore, well, you have that opportunity. And, you know, as long as it goes, you know, relatively well, this will have been one of the more shrewd offseason moves, where not only did you just sort of try to solve your biggest issue, you double down on it, and your double dipping actually may be to the benefit of your superstar quarterback.
Yeah, I'm glad, Nate, you said that about Juwan Taylor, because Mac and I are like two old men yelling at clouds yeah. when it comes to Juwan Taylor. In fact, we actually said the exact same thing as you did, you know, just a second ago yesterday. We said, once the play starts, he's really good. It's just keeping him
really
on the
good.
Line of scrimmage. Like, he is so severely underappreciated because Chris Collinsworth tried to expose him 2 years ago.
It's so true. And I don't, and I, again, it's, we've never seen a former, let me just remind people, we've never seen before, this was 2 years ago, a former NFL wide receiver literally IQ'd a right tackle, not a left tackle, for a right-handed quarterback. No, the right tackle, just because it's like, well, hey, I mean, Aiden Hutchinson can't get an extra second. Dude, I didn't think you were a referee. You're a former player. How can you do this?
Right.
You know, so it was fascinating for a time, but it really set a precedent. And, you know, I don't know if the league was in, you know, Chris Collinsworth's ears saying, like, hey, you know, this has happened, or if the Detroit Lions are like, hey, we need any little advantage we can get on opening night, even though the Chiefs don't have Chris Jones, they don't have Travis Kelce mm-hmm. for you know, unusual circumstances. Jawan Taylor is still a very much above average right tackle when he's fully healthy, when he's playing sound in the offense and the system. I want to remind people of this too. Jawan Taylor played excellent in the Super Bowl 2 years ago. Excellent.
Yep.
So, and that was against a very good 49ers, you know, pass rush, which allowed Mahomes obviously to be heroic in the fourth quarter and overtime.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Yeah, like I think Jawan Taylor, he's going to go down in that kind of Daniel Sorensen category of the underappreciated player, you know, for the Kansas City Chiefs.
Yeah, it's honestly fair. Now, Daniel Sorensen had a longer tenure, we assume, just because the way the contract looks for Jawan Taylor, this will likely be his last year unless he, again, plays amazing and they somehow find a way to restructure. But yeah, just a guy that you know that there are, you know, he's not, he's clearly got a flaw or two.
Mm-hmm.
But was part of the dynastic run, was part of the reason that you were successful. You know, it's not every day that you just take somebody from the Jacksonville Jaguars and they can help you win a Super Bowl, can help you get to another Super Bowl. You know, and so, hey, for Jawan, he's veteran and wise enough to know, hey, I've been through an Andy Reid training camp. I need my knee right for the preseason, for obviously opening night against the Chargers. Hey, Jalen Moore has not gone through this before. Neither has Josh Simmons. Let them dudes, like, have these opportunities, and let me continue to get treatment. Let me continue to just sort of get, you know, some mental reps here and there, you know, be a voice in the meeting rooms with the offensive line. But, like, Jawan Taylor season really don't start until, like, August 15th or something.
He's smart, man. If you're a veteran guy and you can pull that off, by all means, go ahead and do that. All right, before we let you get out of here, what other position battles are you kind of looking at right now on this field? Everybody's focused on the tackle and the offensive line. What else, Nate?
So the other thing that jumps out to me is that cornerback, because remember, guys, part of this is because Christian Fulton has his own knee injury that appears to be a little bit more significant than Jawan Taylor's. So again, who knows how long Christian Fulton, you know, really the first defensive acquisition in free agency, how long he's going to be, you know, out of training camp. Now that throws a monkey wrench because he was supposed to be starting on the outside along with Jalen Moore so that Trent McDuffie could slide to the inside to be a nickel. Well, that didn't happen yesterday, kids. They still had Tremari Connor at nickel. And I think Noel Williams, the fourth round draft pick from California, he is now in the battle with not only Watson and Joshua Williams, but honestly, like, can we see, like, how versatile can Noel Williams be for Steve Spagnuolo to where you can put Tremari Connor back to his natural position, I believe, which is safety. You don't need him covering quick, you know, speedy receivers in the middle of the field, you know, at the line of scrimmage, basically, when Trent McDuffie is, like, right there. So what happens with the cornerback rotation, I think, is an interesting position battle because you can track that between now, when the pads come on, preseason. Like, it's pretty easy to evaluate cornerbacks compared to, like, you know, linebackers when they can't hit or tackle you. Or, you know, Leo, like, they're telling Leo Chenal yesterday, hey, man, please be nice. That's Rashee Rice. That's our number one receiver. Don't kill him.
Yeah. Don't go out there and make it like last season where we didn't have Rashee Rice all year.
Right. Yeah, I mean, hey, I know you're excited. It's day one of training camp. Listen, buddy, it's a long month. Just touch him up real nice. Let him be on his way.
Yeah. Well, you be on your way. You drive safe up to training camp. Get good information. It'll appear on ESPN. Congratulations on the new job as well.
Yeah, congrats, man.
Very excited for you.
Thank you.
Couldn't have happened to a better human being, and I mean that from the bottom of my heart. You're one of the top of the class, my man. I'm excited for you.
Thank you, Bob. Thank you, Mac. It's a pleasure as always, gentlemen. And look, you guys stay cool for me, right? Just stay inside because I'm going to be sweating momentarily.
Yeah, we'll try our best and you get some water in you. All right.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
All right. That's Nate Taylor of ESPN with us here on 96.5 The Fan, our Chiefs insider. Always good to catch up with Nate. And I do mean that. He's
love
one
it.
Of the greats
oh, awesome.
Of all time. So you were scouring the interwebs yesterday, as they like to call them in the Gen Z vernacular. They're trying to get away from the internet right now. And Mike Borgonzi, who used to be here in Kansas City, has his new, I guess you could call it a dream job, being the GM of an NFL team. Right? I don't know that many people dream to be the GM of the Texans or the Titans, but he's the GM of the Tennessee Titans and was asked this question yesterday.
Last three questions right here, guys.
Simple question. The team you put on the field tomorrow, can that team win the Super Bowl?
Listen, we have, that's always the goal every year. Yeah. We also realize we have a lot of work to do on this roster.
Last two.
That's it, right then and there. Is this team good enough that you're going to put out there tomorrow to win the Super Bowl? You asked if that was a fair question. Absolutely a fair question.
You think it's a fair question?
Absolutely it's a fair question, yeah.
I kind of think
that's
what
fans want. It's what fans want to know going into a season. Are we going to have an opportunity to win the Super Bowl? Is this team going to be good enough? And Borgonzi, I thought, answered it brilliantly. You know, that's our goal, but, you know, we know that there's improvements. I mean, what he really could have said, he goes, I wouldn't be sitting here if this roster was ready to win the Super Bowl, you know,
yeah.
Because they wouldn't have made a change at the general manager position if that roster was ready to win the Super Bowl. But I kind of like that question because I like to know how you're going to answer that question, because a lot of people would say, yeah, we're ready to win the Super Bowl when you're clearly not. I don't think the Titans are ready to win the Super Bowl by any stretch of the means. We don't even know who their quarterback is going into the season. But I think it's kind of an insight into, you know.
Well, we know now.
We don't know how good he's going to. We don't know how our quarterback is going to produce.
Yes.
We know nothing about Cam Ward. Literally nothing about the number one overall draft pick, right? And so I like that question. Just kind of see where their heads are and how they answer that question. You know, if he would have said, no, we're not ready to win the Super Bowl, everybody would have been talking about it, right? The Titans aren't ready to win the Super Bowl.
But he would have been honest. Honestly, I tweeted at this video yesterday, Mac J. Morey 25 on X, subtle plug, that every GM's answer should be no. No one's ready to win the Super Bowl in July. And you shouldn't be because you've got a long road to hoe. You got to get ready for the Super Bowl in February. So it's not all about the talent. It's about being a team and getting everyone together. I just thought the question was major bait. I thought it was in bad faith. I just thought it was...
Do you hate the person who asked the question? Be honest.
I actually think I do know that person, and I don't know if... I want to confirm if it is that person. But
if it's the person you think it is, do you like that person?
No.
Okay, there you go.
But that person would ask a question like that because it gets clicked, and it's just what are we really asking here? What's the point of this question? I just think no one's ready to win the Super Bowl right now, and certainly not the Titans. The guy who asked that question knows this team's not going to win the Super Bowl, and they're not ready to win the Super Bowl, and they're not talented enough. I thought Mike Borgonzi answered it correctly.
I love the answer.
I think you're right. I was okay with that answer. I think another answer could have been no one's ready to win it right now. The guy to the left of him,
who was the other guy up there?
I don't know.
Him,
he's right? Like sniffling, laughing kind of thing, smirking and stuff. I think probably got to rein that in a bit because you kind of see from his reaction, he's kind of like, I mean, no. You know what I mean? His face is like, no, dude, what the hell?
Yeah. I think the answer really should have been, hey, man, I wouldn't be sitting here right now in my first year as a GM job if this roster was ready to win the Super Bowl. We know we've got areas of which to improve. Our coaches are going to coach these guys up to the best of their ability. We got a new quarterback in here. But, no, I mean, if we were ready to win the Super Bowl, I'd still be in Kansas City watching Patrick Mahomes.
Exactly. Yeah, which brings us to our Super Bowl favorite list. And it just came out. Baltimore Ravens. New Super Bowl favorites, +650 to win the bowl.
Yeah, +650 for the Baltimore Ravens. I wouldn't pick them as the Super Bowl, favorites this year. I mean, to me, obviously, you know where I would pick.
Of course.
You know, the Kansas City Chiefs, but I know how betting works. You want to get money on both sides, right? You want a 50-50 split, basically, if you're the books. And so you've got the Chiefs at 8-1, right behind the Eagles and Bills at 7-1 to go out there and win the Super Bowl. And then the Lions are fifth at 9-1.
And I do not like that.
You don't like what?
The Lions. I think I would stay away from that bet. I'm off the Lions officially, I think.
You are?
I think I'm officially off of Detroit.
Why?
Well, we were talking about the coaching changes yesterday, and I knew all about that already. And then we talk about the lack of changes on the defensive side. Yes, they were super hurt there, but they lost a lot of those guys who got healthy. It's not like they had added additions on offense. You lose Ben Johnson. You lose two offensive linemen. I'm just like, yeah, I'm kind of out. This could be a good team, but they're certainly not what they were.
Yeah, you're absolutely right about that, and you've been listening to me a little bit too long because I've been saying I didn't realize they had lost 8 assistant coaches too.
That's nuts.
You know that you lost your 2 coordinators and a total 8 assistant coaches from your team. Ugh, that's a big number.
A lot.
Like if that's Andy Reid losing those coaches, you're like, wow, that's a lot of coaches. But it's Andy; he'll be fine.
He'll
figure it out. They'll get things taken care of. He'll hire the right people. Dan Campbell doesn't have that track record right now.
Exactly.
And it's okay to have doubt about people who don't have track records, right? It's okay to say, I don't know what they're going to do. Dan Campbell was really good, but he lost 8 assistants, and his 2 top assistants have moved on. How much were they responsible for? Two offensive linemen. That's a big loss as well for this team. You know, Aiden Hutchinson barely played last year, right? They're getting him back. But as we know with these knee injuries, it's not the day you come back. It's a year after the day that you come back until these guys firmly believe mentally that they're ready to go out there and trust it. And in sports, we want everything to be immediate. We want it to be right now. Like you and I were talking in break about Jack Caglione. He's done nothing. Like the hype for that guy was there. And I told you, I go, I was kind of cautious about it. I wasn't ready to bring Jack Caglione up. And they brought him up at the worst possible situation when they were desperate and needed somebody to come up. And they brought Jack Caglione up. And I don't know that they put him in the best possible position to be successful. And that's kind of what we talked about.
BBL stinky.
I said it from the beginning of the year, right? I said it from the beginning of the year. I'd like to see the kid come up, but I don't want him to come up when we have a situation where they're forcing him to come up. And they did exactly what we said they shouldn't have done with Jack Caglione. And we're seeing the results of it. I mean, last night, out in right field, looking like a butcher out there. He wasn't ready. But they forced him up because they needed him, because everybody else failed. And so they had no choice but to bring Jack Caglione up. That's why I wonder about the Lions. Yep. We've seen Dan Campbell have success, but we've not seen Dan Campbell replace his entire coaching staff. We've not seen Dan Campbell do it without, you know, Ben Johnson, who people are bowing at the altar of, and Aaron Glenn in New York, two guys that went on to be head coaches now in this league, and then six other assistants, two offensive linemen. Like, there should be a lot of question marks around Detroit. Now, if they go out there again and they win 11 or 12 games and they win that division and they're in the playoffs, then I think we can start talking about Dan Campbell. Okay, this guy's graduated to that next level of coaches,
I agree. He would be in a new echelon.
Yeah.
He would be officially like an elite head coach.
Yep.
If he gets through this, I agree. They win 11, 12 games, battle for that division again, contenders. He's serious.
Yeah, and have the offense that they did last year where they were having fun. Yo, you want to talk about a team that was having fun last year.
Man.
The Lions were having themselves a ball of fire last year, man. It was awesome to watch them. That's the fun that the Chiefs want to bring back. But I'm not ready to say Dan Campbell can do that because I haven't seen Dan Campbell do that. I don't know what he's going to do now that he lost a lot of his assistant coaches. Easy enough for me to say. Some guys prosper. Some guys do great with all that. Sean McVay, fine. Andy Reid, fine.
Yep.
You know, those guys have that track record. They can replace their assistants. We'll see if Dan Campbell can. We'll see if he can get after them. Coming up here on 96.5 The Fan, there's a guy you never heard of that said something so wrong that Mac is so pissed. We'll let you hear it next.
Hey, it's Michael Wacha, and you're listening to Fesco and Dusty on your home for Royals baseball, 96.5 The Fan.
In about 10 minutes or so, we'll talk to Matt Quatrero, the manager of the Royals. They got a day game in Chicago today against the White Sox on the north side, and then they come back home. And trade deadline is 8 days away. And here is what the Athletic's Ken Rosenthal is saying about the Royals. Are you ready for this one, Mac? Are you ready for this one? The Royals, 4.5 games back of the AL wild card race, are making it clear to clubs that if they trade Seth Lugo, they want controllable outfield help in return. I would say no duh to that. Yeah. I mean, I think that's obviously what we were looking at here.
Thank you, Sherlock.
Yes, but he does go on to say, which I think is intriguing, the Royals aren't at that point yet, though. Lugo is likely to turn down a $15 million player option for 26 and become a free agent. Great. The Royals not only would consider giving him a qualifying offer, but also believe that they would be competitive in trying to re-sign him, so they're in no rush to disrupt the relationship. The thin state of the Royals' rotation, as exemplified by their choice to start Rich Hill on Tuesday night, is another reason the front office is hesitant to act. Righty Michael Lorenzen, recovering from a left oblique strain, is likely two rehab starts away from returning, maybe more. Cole Reagan's dealing with his injury. A losing streak and or injury prior to the trade deadline obviously would alter the Royals' thinking, and even if they stay in the race, trading Lugo would be tempting if it brought a strong enough return. That's where I am about that. I think if you can trade Lugo and improve your ball club from an outfield standpoint, from a bat standpoint, it's easier to acquire a controllable bat in a trade than it is to go out there on the free agent market and try to sign somebody and overpay for an outfield bat. I think you trade Seth Lugo. You can always re-sign Seth Lugo in the offseason. There's no rule in place that says if you trade somebody, you know, you can't re-sign them this offseason. And that may be the best thing for this organization, both currently and in the future, is to trade Seth Lugo, get that controllable outfield bat help, and then, hell, re-sign Seth Lugo in the offseason if you feel like you can do it. So I think you go to Seth and you say, look, dude, we're probably not going to the playoffs. I don't think, again, this is a playoff team right now. And we need to get better, obviously. You can help us do that, but we want to re-sign you in the offseason. Trading you right now does not say we're done with you. We don't want you part of this team. We just feel like we can improve our team really big right now at this moment by using you as a trade chip. And then when the offseason comes around, let's sit down and have these conversations. We want to bring you back to Kansas City. I think you make that perfectly clear to Seth. That's what I would do if I was the GM, but again, I'm not, so I don't know, you know, what the protocols are or things of that nature. But that's how I would handle the situation. I would just say, hey, Seth, dude, we got to trade you. You're a valuable trade piece right now. We can really improve our ball club, and we want you back next year. So if that's something you want, just let you know we're all on the same page. We're not trading you because we don't like you. We don't want you around. We're trading you because we have an opportunity to really improve our club and then to make it even better by bringing you back next year as well.
Ba-da-ba-ba-ba, I'm loving it. Well, hello, everybody. Happy Wednesday.
Maybe that'll be the next poll. We'll see what people think about Seth Lugo and sending him off. But as far as picking up the option for Salvador Perez right now, about 200 votes on the Fan 965 Twitter page. Should the Royals pick up the option for Salvador Perez? Yes, 84%. No, about 16%.
Yep, it's a big swing to the yes. Go out there and pick up that option for Salvador Perez because nobody wants to see him playing for another team, and he has earned the option of being picked up here in Kansas City. He's playing some really nice baseball right now. All right, Mac, I think I got a new segment. Why is Mac all mad?
Why is Mac worked up?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, who's this guy? Rhett Lashley?
Rhett Lashley. He's the head coach at the school in college football, man. Former Arkansas quarterback.
SMU head coach Rhett Lashley.
Never heard of him.
Well, he takes a shot at the SEC in defense of his just highly touted conference, the ACC. The SEC has had the same six schools with the champions with the championship since 1964. Not a single one has been different since 1964. That's top heavy to me. That's not depth. First off, that's half of the conference. If you take it, depending on how many teams were in the conference at that point, 10 to 12, 13 teams, that's half the conference. One. Two, he's leaving out Kentucky in 1975, who tied for the championship, so you would count them. That's seven. And five have won the SEC championship, five different teams, since 2008. The national championship since 2008. And then not to mention, in the ACC, Clemson has won eight of the last 10 ACC championships.
You want to talk about a top-heavy conference. Like, ACC is... It's
Clemson.
Yeah.
Florida State, sometimes, but it's Clemson.
Yeah, but more often than not, it's not Florida State. More often than not, it's Clemson and like everybody else. Like North Carolina's never been really any good. Duke's never been any good, or Wake Forest, or any of these like, you know, truly basketball schools in the Carolinas that are in the ACC. That's never really been a football conference. And so, look, it's all about propaganda right now at this time of the year. Throw something out there and you know, use buzzwords and whatnot and say the SEC is top heavy and people, you know, will kind of talk about you and SMU. But, I mean, look, he put his club in a great position, and I think SMU is the sleeping giant of college football.
Oh, wow.
I really do.
Okay.
I think they got more money than you know what to do with.
That's fair.
I mean, look at their alumni list. It starts with the Hunts, right?
Like, yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And so they also, too, why I think SMU is the sleeping giant, because they were doing this stuff 30 years ago and got put on death row for it, you know? And so they got double secret probation that wasn't a secret. They lost everything. And so now they've got an opportunity to say, okay, it's revenge time. You talk about the Chiefs playing with revenge. Look at SMU right now. I think that is the university where we're going to see one of the biggest flips when it comes to which teams are good and how the NIL is helping. I think SMU, I think TCU, any of these schools that have these huge, rich alumni bases are going to have an opportunity to do it. Texas Tech is another one, and it has nothing to do with Mahomes. It has zero to do with Patrick Mahomes. They got some hedge fund guy who's 40 years old that's kicking in $55 million a year to go out there to help his athletic program out. So you've got certain schools that are going to do it, but I really do. I believe SMU, that campus, that city, all that money that they have at that university, dude, I think they really are the sleeping giant of college football because they got revenge from the last 40 years of being nothing because the NCAA shut them down with the Eric Dickerson stuff.
Yeah, with all the Eric Dickerson stuff. Yeah. Now they've loaded up. Now they're ready to go. And that whole thing is ridiculous that they got, I mean, they got absolutely destroyed for that when so many other schools were doing the same exact stuff
SMU
was doing. So, yeah. No, they've loaded up. And, yeah, Rhett may be a sleeping giant. That's awesome. Good for him. But the SEC is quite literally the deepest conference in all of sports.
Yeah.
And depth isn't just about championships and winning. Like, depth is relevancy. And talk to me about teams that are even relevant in college football world in the ACC. Is it more than four?
How many are relevant in the Big 12?
Yeah, is it more than four?
How many?
I mean
Colorado's K-State. Relevant because of Deion.
Yep.
K-State's relevant because they're always good and will always be good. Like, it's one of the most solid college football programs in the country, right? And I know some people will look at that as a backhanded compliment, but K-State, you know, if you're a K-State fan, you're going to win 8 or 9 games just about every single year, go to a bowl game, and have fun watching your team play, right? Who else in the Big 12? Is UCF back because they hired Scott Frost?
Utah, I don't know. Cincinnati, like, these are all just meh.
Yeah. Arizona State.
Arizona, maybe.
Houston. I don't know.
Those are all
schools. You're going maybe, though, right?
Those, yeah, the maybe. These are all schools that once every 2 or 3 years have a solid squad, but the other two are like, nah, this is an off year. This is a 6-win year instead of an 8 or a 9-win year.
Like, once Oklahoma and Texas left the Big 12, sorry, man, the Big 12 ain't got nobody that you can rely on every single year.
I wonder where they went.
The SEC.
Ah, that's right.
Yeah, that's the SEC is where they went. Coming up, we'll talk to Matty Q, find out what his take was on Rich Hill last night, and the trade deadline is about a week away. We talk to the manager next.
Fesco and Dusty. Subscribe and watch the show on YouTube by going to our channel at The Fan 965, Kansas City's FM sports station. 965, The Fan.